Welcome to another episode of Autosave. I'm Camille Salazar-Hadaway, here with my host, co-host, Nick Andrade. I feel like you always host me because you're just carrying it with all these impressions that you just give us in every episode. So thank you for hosting me with all those impressions.
I don't even know what impression I should have this time. Like, maybe I'll be clouded and be like, life sucks, man, and I just hate everything. Or I could be like Aerith and be like, life is amazing, and I almost sound like Mickey Mouse. Oh,
yeah. Don't do Aerith ever again, please. But maybe Jesse. Maybe we'll get Jesse later on.
Jesse's like just normal woman voice. I don't know. She sounds like a regular human.
Well, on this episode, we'll have to see if we get some impressions from Nick. But we're also continuing our dive into the game that is Final Fantasy VII Remake. Now, where we left off, a lot happened. Cloud made his way to Sector 7, the slums, and we met Tifa, had a motorcycle battle as one does in the slums, and then we even got asked on a date with Jesse. What a time to be alive.
Thanks for stepping up, Merc. And now for the cherry on top.
Oh. Okay, I get it. Mind letting me breathe?
Depends. Mind coming over tomorrow night? My roommates should all be out for a while.
Are you seriously that desperate? Just let go already.
Only if you promise to come back tomorrow night. Deal?
Cloud playing a little hard to get. And I'm noticing, actually, Jesse's voice is not normal. Like, she has this little, like, deal? Like, mind coming over to my house? You know, like, she has a little quirk in her voice. Yeah.
See, you can do impressions, but I think you're just a little nervous to do them sometimes. But I think you actually are.
Well, I mean, have you heard your impressions? That's why I'm nervous. They're so good.
No, but
good.
You put me on this pedestal. I can't reach it, okay? It's gonna backfire one day where I'm not gonna be doing something good. But Jesse, I wanted to put that clip in there again because it's just hilarious. Like, Cloud is just legit like an asshole, and he's like, "What, are you so desperate? Why do you even want to hang out with me?" And it's like, okay, all right, you're clearly, you know, Camille has had a crush on you from time. You know, most people in this world probably have a crush on either Cloud or Sephiroth at some point in their life. So you got to understand that people want you, you know, regardless. So you can't be hard to get all the time. So maybe sometimes open up yourself to a date or two, man. Come on.
I know. Cloud, if you're going to flirt with the ladies, let them flirt back, because Cloud is flirting exactly with the ladies so far that we've seen in a lot of actual character building with Cloud and all the other characters that we've seen. We've seen Cloud kind of open up a bit. And what we've covered so far was a whole lot of flashbacks in chapter 3 and 4.
There's too many in this game.
I don't know how many times Cloud has flashed back, but now I'm confused. Which Cloud are we looking at? Is this Cloud Soldier, like, right out of the gate of the army? Like, I don't know, man. Hopefully the next episodes that we cover, chapters 5, 6, and 7, will not have as many flashbacks as we've seen before, because I just cannot take it anymore. And I want to just see Sephiroth.
I think the next time I hear, I'm just going to quit the game. I'm just going to turn off my PlayStation, because I've had enough of his flashbacks where he's just like agonizing in pain. He's like, and then Tifa's like, "Are you okay?" And Barret's like, "Are you okay?" And he's just like, and he never explains to anybody what's going on. He's always just like, I'm fine.
Imagine being Tifa, like the really concerned friend, and just like, man, I'm telling you, Barret, like, my friend's usually not this weird. Like, I'm sure he's fine if he's saying he's fine, but I'm, you know, it's a whole thing. But this week, our theme is not going to be all the moans and groans coming from Cloud. It's a trap. Straight out of the mouth of Admiral Akbar. That was a good impression.
Thank you.
Obviously, Admiral Akbar, Star Wars, famous line. It's become, like, even specials. Robot Chicken did a whole special called It's a Trap, and it was their Star Wars special. It was so good. Everyone's done it. And now we are doing it. So we are now validated as being a part of media.
Yay! Ooh, we made it!
Now, you may ask, why It's a Trap? And, you know, clashing that Star Wars, you know, legendary line with Final Fantasy. Well, you know, it's usually when the villains lead you on a wild goose chase, or, you know, they usually lead you into something without your knowledge. That's kind of what's happening here in these chapters, as you'll see as we get to it. And, you know, here for Return of the Jedi, there was the Death Star. It was fully operational.
Wait, let me, I'll do an impression, okay? Are you ready?
Oh, are you going to?
Yes. Oh, DC. No, see, I messed it up. I was trying to do the Emperor. I know it's good. He's like, do it. Okay, let me try
it. Do it now. Do it.
But this is a fully operational. Okay, this is horrible. I'm going to stop. But
it's
that's
fully operating. Yeah, he has like a menacing voice with like scary old man that's kind of creepy, may have ulterior motives. I question his relationship with Anakin. I really do. But that's a whole nother thing that we got to cover on another podcast. But in other media, where we see the main characters falling into a trap, they're getting led into something. And, you know, for example, we see that in the Uncharted games, Indiana Jones. There's so many times where Indy is either working with the good guys or thinks he's working with the good guys, and then he gets led into a trap, betrayed, or, you know, basically the same for Nathan Drake, because Indiana Jones and Nathan Drake are pretty much one.
They are. It's true. They're like the same character. What's so annoying with these kind of things, it's like they're on a chase for some sort of artifact, whether it's Indiana Jones or Nathan Drake. And they always just, they discover everything. And then the bad guys are normally just like, do, waltz in, everything's good. And oh, here, I'll take the idol, or I'll take this item from you. Thanks for walking me into this thing without having to do anything. Like, they do that every time. They gotta watch their back and see who's following them.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you thought you uncovered the tomb of Cleopatra? Psych, we were here first. We've been here for a whole month. Where have you been?
Waiting. Yeah.
Where have you been, Indy? Where have you been, Nathan? Are there any other, you know, franchises that you could really see this, it's a trap theme coming into play?
This was tough because when I was searching in Google, because I'm trying to like remember some of these instances, and every time I typed in things on Google, it would just lead me to Saw and actual traps. Oh. But I was looking for like, I was looking for falling into a trap, not an actual like jigsaw trap where they tie you up with, you know, nails and saws and whatever the heck else. I didn't want anything to do with that. But I finally realized that there were a few. And again, I always bring up Harry Potter. This is the number one thing. And that's when it clicked for me, is Harry was led into a trap by Voldemort. He saw a vision of Sirius dying, but that didn't actually happen. But Voldemort knew that Harry would try to save his friends and people that he loved. So he went after Sirius, thinking that he was there, but he wasn't, because Voldemort wanted him to pick up a prophecy. So that was one trap that Harry, and you know what, Harry? You let Sirius die because you fell into that trap. So shame on you, my friend.
Shame, shame, Harry. Shame, shame. That's a good
one. I also feel bad always bringing up Harry Potter, because I know you're not as big of a Harry Potter fan.
I'm not. So literally when Nick is saying this stuff, I'm like, oh, all right, let me just take a sip of my tea. Here we go again. What did he say? Okay, I think he's done. Let's keep talking. That's what's going in my mind. No, I appreciate that Harry Potter reference. I'm pretty sure a lot of our listeners do. I question why they do. Anyways, Hercules is another one. You know, Meg lures Hercules to save two boys trapped in the canyon. And then Hercules unintentionally releases the Hydra monster set up as a, you know, Constance to kill Hercules. But the Hydra just takes me back to being a kid, because remember the kids' meal you would get, and you get the Hydra along with the kids' meal at McDonald's?
Did you collect the plates from Hercules?
No. No, oh, I didn't. They were plastic, right?
They were. I wish I still had them, because I saw someone had a collection of all the Hercules plates from McDonald's at the time. I think it was, 1998? Wow, I'm really dating myself. Yeah. But I wish I still had those plates, because I had a few of them. And I had some like Mickey Mouse cups and all this other stuff from back in the day. McDonald's had some good toys / memorabilia.
They did. Speaking of traps, McDonald's and their marketing. I mean, I love McDonald's. If you want to sponsor this, go right ahead. But firstly, the Pokemon cards, that's a trap. You go in there, you're 100%. Like, I'm just going to get Pokemon cards because they look really cool. You're out there with $20 less. You have a Big Mac combo, 10-piece nuggets. It's just horrible. Another trap, the BTS meal. Okay, I don't even like BTS, but I found myself in McDonald's going there to get nuggets, and it was the longest wait ever because everyone was there for BTS.
You're not a BTS stan?
No, they have good music. I like, you know, they're good. They're talented. All right, I'm sorry.
Be careful treading on the BTS bit.
They're cool, but I'm just not a diehard.
Okay, that's fair. You know. The Pokemon cards too, by the way, McDonald's. I just didn't even bother buying them because I know there was some guy that was like, can I have 400 Happy Meals, please? So that they could buy all the Pokemon cards and they'd be sold out. So didn't even try with that. But the BTS, I do really want to try those nuggets.
Of course, those were really random examples of how things could be a trap. And you know, we're going to get into the real trap here. These chapters that just highlight that over and over again. But first, before we get into some gameplay, we want to mention that we are on Patreon. That's patreon.com/autosavepod. So join today if you'd like to support the show. After the break, we'll dive into chapter 5 of Final Fantasy VII Remake on autosave.
ID scan in progress.
Huh? No way!
Emergency ID scan in progress. Unauthorized IDs detected. Threat level critical. Inspection and containment sweep initiated. Commencing at the rear of the train.
Not clear.
Get over here! Now!
Take care of them, Cloud!
On it.
All right, we get into it right away as Barret, Tifa, and Cloud head on a train with fake IDs? Okay, sure. To head to Sector 4 to go after another Mako Reactor. This is Mako Reactor 5. Now, the trains usually, I feel like this train bit is really an iconic moment for any OG FF7 fan. And, you know, the trains usually have a normal scan that go through. But it looks like someone's tipped off because Shinra has raised security on the train and they prepare for avalanche, which is interesting because when you first get on the train, they scan a few times.
Right, exactly.
Right? And they don't get you.
Yes.
But then someone on the train is a snitch. Someone, because how, why would they adjust their scans, right?
We have a rat.
We need to sniff them out.
Can I say one thing off the hop? Is what I really wanted to say in this entire show is I'm so confused at the objective sometimes. So we have to go to Sector 4 to then go after Mako Reactor 5 in Sector 4. I'm so confused to get to Sector 5, to get to Sector 4. I don't know, man.
The naming mechanics of all of Midgard does not make sense as the naming mechanics of Final Fantasy VII Remake just doesn't make sense for the title, knowing Square's history, right?
Again, why isn't it called like Final Fantasy VII Unborn Wings or Chains of Memories Past? Like
1.7 Remix.
Yes. If you want to get into like Kingdom Hearts weirdness. Yeah,
I mean, we know this is only one part of like a, you know, a whole four part, I think they said, or something like that.
There's been Advent Children, and like Japanese games specifically are great with names, or maybe their names are like too long, where it's like Final Fantasy Children of the Unborn Fighting for Life of Children of the Not Born. I don't know what I'm saying anymore, but it's normally really long, so I'm surprised they just said, let's just slap on Remake and call it a day.
Let's just say what it is, all right? It's Final Fantasy VII Remake Unborn Advent Children 1.4 Remix. That's actually the full name of this game.
And given, like, already we're looking at it like, okay, maybe this isn't the original, so maybe it shouldn't be slapped on with Remake. Maybe it should be reimagined.
Yeah. I'm still gunning for Remix. I'm going to put it in there as much times as I can. Of course, the naming doesn't make sense. And when we get back to the trains and this level, which we started on and then went on a rant. aiming mechanics don't make sense, but that doesn't matter because security's on your tail. And unfortunately, the train scans after that rat, whoever it was on this train, tipped him off. The scans figure out who you really are and the enemies just come at you. And this is where healing materia really will be useful, I feel, for you. How'd you find this part of the battle?
It's pretty easy, but again, like I, especially throughout this entire game, I have to heal so much. I normally just like stick on Cloud as much as possible. And then I usually forget about the other two bozos. So I'm just like, I'm just kidding. They're not bozos. I love them both, but I just have to cure so much. But these slug rays, again, Camille, I feel like you are just right. Okay. Because I hate using magic in any game I play. We've been through this many times, but I think this game consistently throughout, you need magic and you need magic help. And if you don't use magic, you're in trouble. So again, these slug rays, they're hard to hit and you need to stagger them. And in order to do that, you got to use magic. So applaud to you for the magic
Thank
user
you.
Over here.
Thank you. I keep my Barret equally leveled with Cloud, okay, because of his lightning advantage. So I just want to say, yes, I am an expert at Final Fantasy VII Remake. This is the game for all the mage mains, okay? Now, there's a small cutscene once you beat those enemies, and this is where you see Heidegger talking to one of his henchmen. This is so cliche. This is like such a cliche scene. I love it. You know, Heidegger is really upset, and he's upset. You know, he wants to know where Barret, Cloud, where Avalanche is, what are they going to do? And his henchman pretty much has no answers to any of those questions, which is like, why even have any henchmen around you? Because you're going to have to kind of do the job. We know this is leading up for him to do the job himself. Come on, let's be real, right?
I think there's a point where he mentions Barret that he's captured, I guess. But and then he says to let him go. So I don't really know what Shinra's plan is here at this point.
Yeah, because, you know, in the train battle, you kind of lose Barret. And then apparently you find out through this cutscene that Shinra actually has him, but it seems like they're kind of pulling the strings here and you're playing into their, it's a trap, or it's leading up to that because they purposely let Barret go. So, you know, that's kind of like not a good sign when you see enemies like saying, oh, just let them go now. We'll get them later. Never a good sign. Now, once you walk along the underground some more, you find Barret, who is ready to rock and, you know, continue the mission, but there's more of Heidegger.
Sir, analytics reports that the results fall within the admissible range. However, the casualty rate significantly exceeds previous projections.
Remind me what your job is. Is it to question the wisdom of your superiors and bemoan your personal hardships?
Sir?
Casualty rate. You think I care about the casualty rate? They're pawns in a greater game. If your stock runs low, then go round up more from Sector 3 or wherever else. Use your head and bring me solutions instead of problems for a change, yes?
Sir.
What is up with the bad guys being just big jerks?
Cliche.
Shut up, Heidegger. Like, I don't care about you. I really am. Does his henchmen have a union? They need one. I feel like he's violating so many HR policies. This guy's a complete a-hole.
This is like when I talk to you about always like wondering, especially in movies and video games, we never see anyone go to the bathroom. You bring up a great point with like unions and stuff. Because I always think about this like with Star Wars and Stormtroopers. Okay. I wonder about their normal life where they're like eating lunch and then it's like, oh, it's 7 o'clock. I have to do the Emperor's bidding. The same thing here. It's like you have to listen to this guy Heidegger basically saying, pawns, I don't care about anything. I don't care about you. Just do your damn job. It's like there's got to be some sort of HR violation, like you said.
Yeah, it's not good. Unionize, people. Unionize. All right. Now, chapter 5 is called Dodged Pursuit, and partially because that's what it is mostly. You're running around in this chapter trying to find your way around, and it's also called Dodged Pursuit because we literally have to follow a picture of a dog.
Yes, it's spelt dodged and dogged together.
It's playing off the whole dog dodge. It's trying to be cute, which it is kind of cute. The dog is really cute because this dog has kind of been used as an icon or a mascot for Shinra, but then it didn't start off that way. So then now everyone who's against Shinra kind of uses it as an underground message to those that are trying to have a revolution start. So it's cute. Did you like this part? Because it was a lot of running underground, a lot of running where the trains are. And I had a hard time personally figuring out which way to go.
Oh, 100%. I think I ran the wrong way at some point.
Yes.
And then I got to find where I'm going because it doesn't really tell you if you're going the wrong way. I know you have the map, which makes it a little bit easier. But again, there's just so much running around in these missions that especially with the underground, I didn't know where I was going or what I was doing. I realized after I have to follow this dog. I didn't realize you had to follow him with his nose pointing in that direction.
Yes.
But there's not really any like tips in order to tell us where we're supposed to go, which again, I'm sure most video game fans, they like a little bit of a challenge. But when you have to run around for 20, 30 minutes, you're just like, okay, where am I going and where is the next checkpoint?
You make a really strong point. Like, I don't want to be told where to go. I like the cute idea of having the dog point us in the right direction with their little snoot. But when it becomes so repetitive and the environment you're going through looks the same.
Oh, all over.
All the time. Then it just seems so tedious. And you're just like, all right, I want to get this over with. And that's kind of what I felt here. To tell you the truth, I didn't really enjoy this part. At first I did. And then when I found Barrett, I was like, okay, cool. And then there was too much running and I was like, yeah, no, I'm done.
I think there's parts of this game that we can honestly say, we talked about this before with filler, but sometimes it just drags on a little bit. And this part is one of those things where it's like, okay, I think we could probably get there sooner. Maybe make the map a little bit smaller.
Yeah, and they try to, you know, change it up a bit because they throw in a few adversaries in here. You have specifically Grass Strikes and Queen Grass Strikes. I mean, those are pretty much the real two enemies that you come across here. Which, the Queen is not difficult, but she's just a nuisance because it takes more to really down her.
And then I think there's, at the end of the chapter, a Crab Warden.
Yes, you come across a Crab Warden. And how did you go about that? Because you could tackle either his little claws or the generator. So how did you go about that?
The generator takes like no damage, right?
Yeah. You have to like weaken the legs first and then you could hit the generator.
I'm really stubborn where I refuse to almost use magic half the time because I'm using my MP normally on like click cures and stuff like that. But I just like to melee. So I consistently took longer on fights because I would just like do 4 or 5 damage at a time every time I swung a sword or used Barrett's gun, and it would get me nowhere and it would just take forever.
He is stubborn. I think that's what we learned right now. Nick's stubborn. But did you get a lot of damage from the flamethrower? Because that was my like really tough area, especially when I was trying to use Barrett's overcharge, because you know how it locks and then you kind of have to click it a few times. Barrett stands there for so long that flamethrower just gets you. So like I found myself switching to Tifa Cloud, hoping that the like when I go off Barrett, they just charge that overcharge for me. So then when I switch back to Barrett, it's good to go.
I didn't even think about that. But yeah, the Barrett overcharge is so long. He goes,
yeah. And then he clicks. He's like,
and he's like, come on, just use it. Use your big ball of fire, man. It takes forever, but I have such tough time like dodging things. So in general, I like to use the hard attacks for Cloud.
Yep.
And so when I do that, he can't move properly.
Yeah, he's slow.
So I can't dodge, and then I forget, to switch back. So then I just take a boatload of damage. So then I just have to mass cure. Basically, my strategy is horrible, and listen to Camille on every strategy because she's doing it way better than I am.
Thank you, Nick, for telling the people what they already know. I'm kidding. Like we said, you have to focus on the legs with this Crab Warden. And pretty much like when you do that, you're off to a good start. You're going to get some damage off the generator from there. Use a little lightning is really good as well. Don't play it Nick style and just be stubborn about it. Be diverse in how you go about this enemy, and then you'll be able to take them down no problem. Nick, actually, now I'm wondering, did you die at all going against the Crab Warden?
No. Okay. I have enough ethers that I use and whatnot. I cure enough, but it just takes me a lot longer. So I'm just, again, you know what? You don't have to keep telling me that I'm a horrible game player.
I see
where you're going with this. This bullying has to stop. Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it does. I'm sorry. But you know what does work when you kind of build up after you dodge a few missiles from the Crab Warden, you're able to use your summon, and that pretty much is just gonna do all the damage you need to destroy this boss. So I found that very helpful. Whenever you could use a summon is a nice one. So that triggers more from Heidegger being mean, really mean actually, to his henchmen. I feel sorry for them. I mean, like, you see them sweating. They're like, oh, I don't even know how to respond to this. They represent every worker that ever has been like the first job you've had. Not sure if you messed up. That is Heidegger's henchmen. Now, he has a weird argument with some of the soldiers and basically tells them they have to do his bidding or else, the big or else. And then he's upset because of the Crab Warden being pretty much defeated by Cloud and Barret and Tifa. And then there is a camera that comes out and then starts following Cloud after the Crab Warden is destroyed. Yeah, where was the camera before?
That's why this like whole plan, the grand finale, as Heidegger said when he was talking to President Shinra, I just don't understand what this plan is. Like, there was a camera, and then there was a camera on the Crab Warden, and then that got destroyed, but they still have a camera. Again, this is JRPG at its finest, just so convoluted that I'm struggling to keep up with the story a little bit.
I don't get the camera thing. But I guess that'll reveal itself later. Also, I understand. I'm going to side with Heidegger in this one. I understand why he's upset. Okay. That's a lot of money. I know Shinra's made of money, but that is a lot of tech going into just these three people. You know, you're trying to get rid of them. Oh, now my camera's destroyed. Of course, I'm going to deal with that myself. If I was Heidegger, I'd do it too. Like, that's coming out of his expenses. You know, what is his bonuses are affected by the damage that the equipment takes?
Just draw up a better plan. This plan is too convoluted. That's all.
Well, yes, you're right. Sometimes the honest truth of a story is that it's convoluted, and that's what it is here. And that's pretty much it for Chapter 5 as the group finally finds their way to Sector 4.
Through here and straight on to Reactor 5.
You make it sound so simple.
Only because it is. That there's the reactor support pillar.
So what's the plan?
After plan E comes F, G, and then H.
Thought E was the last.
This here is Section F.
We cut through Section G and head for H.
A cargo platform in H will get us closer to the reactor. Biggs should be somewhere over there. Looks like the sun's going down on Midgar.
Right. Double time. We got a date with the reactor.
All right, so Cloud kind of voices what we're all thinking. What the heck is the plan? You're telling me they hire this merc. They never, in all of their discussions about the plan,
yeah,
Cloud is never present. He's told to wait.
No.
Just wait, play some darts while we talk about all the stuff that we're going to do tomorrow. You'll be there, but you'll figure it out along the way.
I just, this whole time, again, we talked about convoluted plans. It's not only the bad guys who have the convoluted plans, it's also Avalanche.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here like, okay, there's plan E, F, G, H, I don't know what's going on. And then they mention how they have to get to where they need to get. And it's like, okay, we got to cross E, go down E, then make a left turn on H, then we're going to G, then we're going below F. And I was like, what? And this whole mission in general is exactly like they're explaining it. It's confusing as hell.
It is so confusing. But realistically, we're experts, so we'll explain it. We start in Section F. and need to ride a cargo platform to Section H to reach the reactor support pillar where Biggs is waiting for us. And that's pretty much it, right? It's honestly not even that difficult for them to really... How long would it have took Barrett just to say, hey, Cloud, it's this. This is the plan.
Like, we were able to come up with that.
It's not that hard.
I'm not sure if it was Japanese to English translation that was faulty, but guys, you could have just explained it like that. Camille right there, that was perfect.
So yes.
Thank you for telling it in layman's terms.
But no, basically, I feel like this whole level is a maze. I was so confused because they have letters for each section and you could go all the way back to, like, I think it's Section B, is there?
Yeah, Section B.
Yeah, so you have to actually look on the walls and, like, these pillars that are within each section to figure out where you are. And if you don't, you will lose track very, very easily.
I got lost multiple times. I think I had to restart the mission one time because I didn't know where I was and how to get away. I just, a lot of running and going back to where I started because I didn't know where I was going. And then I just kind of had to, like, pay attention. Because if you stop paying attention for even the slightest second and you maybe go into a daze, you don't know where you are. And the map doesn't help you either because there's different layers.
And for me, I don't know about you, when you first get into this area, you cross this, like, bridge where there's lots of... Or it's not even a bridge. It's, like, on top of some sort of, like, piping. And there's lots of wind from this fan. And you kind of see the materia that is not attainable... Because there's no way you could get it because the fans are on. But my dumb self started to go back to try to get it.
That's what I did too. Because I always thought that I was missing something. I thought, because I'm like, okay, there's like four materials I need to get. I can't forget about those. So I would always, like, backtrack just in case, just to see if I could get it.
That's what I did. And for me, like, I feel like we kind of play the same in that sense where if we're in an area, we try to do everything in that area first, just in case you trigger a cutscene when you keep going. And this is Final Fantasy, so you know that could happen quite often. So, you know, when you kind of give up on trying to get those materials that are unattainable, you continue through and you find a control room and you turn on the electricity, but shocker, there's no power. So you have to turn on these sun lamps to power the control room. And that kind of had me be like, oh, okay, this is now, hopefully I'll be able to get those materials because now I'm going to have power that will hopefully allow me to get to those places. So then I had that sigh of relief that I wasn't missing anything.
Listen, I love the game. And right now I'm painting a picture like I don't, but some of these, like, quests, it just becomes very cliche where you're like, okay, like, maybe we could have done something a little different here.
Well, it's interesting because it kind of gives it the feeling of what you would have thought was in the original game.
Ah, yes.
It seems dated in a sense to have these very, very trivial missions where it's just turning on different reactors, right? It seems very much like that's on the PlayStation 1 and they're kind of updating it here, but they're not really. Like I said, finding materia that's too far away. These are some of the obstacles that you come across. Realizing you can't get on a certain bridge or you can't walk a certain way because there's no bridge there to kind of help you get to the other side. And then, you know, you constantly have Barrett and Tifa telling you that you're going the wrong way if you find yourself going the wrong way. Which is really, when you think about it, that makes us look dumb, Nick, because we said we got lost so many times. We just weren't listening to Tifa and Barrett. At all.
Yeah, I know. Every time they would say, well, you're going the wrong way, which is helpful. But also, like you said, makes us look dumb.
Now, what caught my eye from the beginning was the materia. And here's a couple quick notes on the materia that you can obtain. When you're by the collapsed passage there, you could climb down the ladder and destroy the Shinra boxes and follow the path to the two queens' grass strikes. These names for these enemies are horrible. And then use the nearby terminal to move vertically, moving the walkway way down to obtain the materia. And this one is the MP up materia. It's very useful, especially if you're using the magic like me, but Nick probably hated this materia, so then skipped it.
Yes.
Now, then you could actually move down to the platform to the proper level and cross to platform H 07. Now, this is where you could pick up the elemental material, another materia that's useful if you love materia. Again, Nick probably skipped this one.
Yes.
And finally, I'm sure you saw the red chocobo and Moogle summoning materia from the beginning. This one was the one. This is what I had my eyes on. I'm pretty sure, Nick, you got this one.
That was the one, like, I need to make sure I get it.
Yeah.
But it gives you, the game gives you a clear path to it. So it's not like you can somehow miss it. It's on the way, so it's an easy get once you finally unlock the fans and the fans stop working.
Exactly. And you pretty much just need access. So once you turn off enough sun lamps, you could actually go to the other side where the fans are. And then once you get into that room, it kind of triggers a timed battle with like some random enemies, and it changes if you fail, because I failed the first time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did fail. I was low on health. I didn't, you know, replenish my health. It was just stupid decisions all around for Camille.
You didn't use your magic.
I didn't use my magic. I was like, no, I'm keeping this. But then once you actually get through that time battle, then you could access those fans. And there's also a vending machine right there too. So you could have a little sippity doodah on some drinks and replenish your HP as well. I remember actually really excited to use that as summoning, just because it's so iconic.
It is, and it's so cute as well.
It is. It's so cute.
Moogle, to me, like, it exemplifies Final Fantasy. Is what makes me think of Final Fantasy is Moogles. They've been in every single game, and they're in this game, kind of. We'll maybe get to that another time, but it was nice to see him and the Moogles as a summon.
Yes, it was. Now, once you finally get to the access tunnel...
Mercy!
Wait, Cloud? Where's Jesse and Wedge?
Report.
Topside's going nuts after some terrorists jumped off a train. Nice and quiet here, though. So quiet, I had no trouble securing your route into the reactor.
You magnificent son of a bitch! Bring it in!
So, where are the others?
Man.
Jesse got hurt and couldn't make it.
Bad?
Not so bad she couldn't rope in this guy.
Thanks for stepping up.
It's a job.
Worked out pretty good. You picking that train you did. While Shinra scours Sector 4, you could waltz right on into Sector 5. It's a bit of a squeeze, but it ought to get you where you need to go.
Little dark and foreboding for my taste.
Beggars can't be choosers. Oh, and you'll be needing your grappling guns, of course. All set?
Ready to take on the world and then some.
Make sure everyone gets clear, okay?
Will do.
All right. Thanks, Biggs, for that recap there. But let us really recap on what's happening here. Now, there's a clear way to Sector 5. Reactor, no one's around. Cloud has said that there's cameras everywhere. I mean, this just looks like a recipe for disaster. But they just keep going.
I don't get it. They're being filmed. There's no one around. Guys, this is a trap.
Has all the makings of a trap. But you know what? Well, Cloud and friends, good luck into Chapter 7. A trap is sprung.
Sephiroth. Soldiers. Mako. Shinra. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of all of this.
Soldier boy.
Every time Barrett says soldier boy, I just say you.
Soldier boy up in this. Oh.
Yeah. I can't. But here we get another flashback. And this one's really weird because usually a lot of the flashbacks we've been getting up until this point has been Sephiroth. But now Cloud has Tifa on his mind. And, you know, in this flashback, we see Tifa in a cowboy outfit crying over some old looking man who is also in a cowboy getup. And it's her father. And then picks up Sephiroth's katana. And then Cloud comes back to Earth. And that's where, you know, Barret's kind of like, soldier boy. Nick, help me break down this one. Do you remember this flashback from the original?
Again, I think this is another different flashback. I don't remember Tifa ever being in cowboy getup. Do you?
No, I don't.
So I'm starting to think, like, this is just me at this point in time. I haven't played any other part of the game, so I don't know what's going on. But my theory at this point in time is maybe this game has like a multiverse or multiple realities. And that was my first thought was, okay, if we see Tifa in like a cowboy getup and then she takes Sephiroth's sword, it seems like this is, there might be another story at play here. So I'm trying to really gauge. And at the time, I'm suspicious that maybe they're trying to do some sort of multiverse in this game. But that's my theory, at least.
Interesting. I mean, multiverse is hot. Everyone's trying to do it now. Honestly, I think it would kind of be cool for Final Fantasy to introduce some sort of multiverse, because that allows a lot of their different Final Fantasy games and those iconic characters to kind of collide and interact with each other. And what better world to have that happen than Final Fantasy? But I'm not too confident that's what's happening here. I don't know what's happening. I'm not too confident that it's a multiverse, but I'm just going to wait it out and see.
Okay, my question to you then is, at this point in time, when you first played the game, was there anything going to your mind as to what this could be? Or were you just playing it as is and not really and taking it with a grain of salt?
Well, I think my thing with this game, you know, it tugs on the nostalgia. We've talked about that in previous episodes, but there's so much random stuff that happens. For example, how they can't give a proper plan that I pay attention to. I'm like, okay, this really kind of seems outdated, the dialogue back and forth, that it takes me out of even trying to figure out what's happening in the core story of the game. So I'm literally following this as it goes along, because I don't know what my expectations are here. I know that this game, and I, you know, I've said this before, it will tug on our heartstrings with the nostalgia. I just don't have any high hopes for how it will change the story, because it's a bit dated, you know? Now, apart from another strange memory, we start Chapter 7, and we get a glimpse of President Shinra watching Avalanche on a camera. Well, it's looking like they're setting up an interview. So that's kind of a weird thing to do, get ready for an interview while also spying on these people that you may be brewing a trap for. Barret gives Cloud the bomb, and Cloud sets it up, ready to withdraw to a safe distance and activate the bomb, but...
Wait a minute. Is someone watching us?
My dear sewer rats, as architect of our populist engagement campaign, I, Heidegger, head of public security, bid you welcome.
The chief warmonger.
You should be flattered. Right now, you command the undivided attention of every soul in Midgard.
Huh? What is this?
Breaking news from Mako Reactor 5. Shinra has confirmed the reactor to be the target of the bomb threat issued by the terrorist group Avalanche. Members of the group were observed entering the facility, and security is currently sweeping it for explosive devices. We now go live to the scene.
I'm here in the Sector 5 Undercity. Having confirmed the terrorist target,
you guys
the Shinra Emergency Operations Center has issued an evacuation advisory. Residents are outraged that the tragedy of Mako Reactor 1 was only the first attack in a campaign of violence.
President Shinra has issued a statement providing assurances that the terrorists will soon be brought to justice.
And so, to a people beset by chaos and uncertainty, we will offer the finest comfort, bread and circus.
The big boy.
I give you Shinra's latest triumph of technology, the Air Buster, your executioner.
There it is, okay? Say it together.
It's a trap!
You're telling me, though, in this cutscene, what? Someone's watching us? I mean, Cloud literally said there's cameras.
This whole trap is also so convoluted, but they fell for it because they were just like, whatever, we have no choice. People are spying on us, whatever. And then they're surprised. They're like, oh, what? They've been watching us this whole time? You guys knew about it.
Yeah, it's like, Cloud, did you forget that you know that there's cameras through this whole plan? I don't understand. But we pretty much get an insight of to what Shinra's plan was all along. So pretty much they're following Tifa, Barrett, and Cloud so they could film them bombing the plant and then put that on national TV to paint them as the bad guys before they get captured. So Shinra looks like they're clean and all and good, and Avalanche just looks like they are a bunch of terrorists, right? And then we also see that their newest creation, this is Shinra's newest creation, the Air Buster, has come out to play. So before we get into that battle and how you found that, my question is, do you think it was a bad idea to show Cloud and the gang the Air Buster in hologram form? Or was that the great idea because now you're just showing you have an ego and you're not afraid of them?
Again, I think both sides are equally horrible at making plans. But I just don't understand why the villains always love to just tell the protagonists what they're planning. And it's just weird, too, because they literally hear them saying, oh, the Airbuster's only 60% operational. Like, you're literally giving out weaknesses live, and it's just nothing is working properly at this point.
They're
just handing out that
blueprint right there and saying, here, these are the weak points. Now, we have quite a few soldiers and mechs to deal with here, and we run around trying to find a way out. And as we go through security doors, we realize that we could tamper with the construction of the Airbuster because it's only at conveniently 60%. So there's much more that they have to do there. So you could decide to divert whichever combination of items you prefer to disarm what it's equipped with, right? So you could reduce the AI programming core effects, and that affects the tactical awareness and frequency of the fire from the Airbuster, or you could reduce the big bomber shells, which affects the number of times it could use big bomber power. And then you could also dispose of the M units, and that's the number of overall units the Airbuster has, so it's a bit slower. Now, what combination that you did here, because you could get rid of four things.
I wanted to make it as even as possible, so I think I took out each one once. And then the fourth time I thought maybe, you know, the big bomber shell, because I was guessing at the time without doing the battle that it was a big damage dealer. So I decided to use that fourth one on the big bomber shell as well. Looking back, probably should have just used most of them on the big bomber shell, because I don't think making it slower doesn't really do too much.
I took that approach as well. I was trying to make it as even as possible, but then amp up the disposal of the big bomber shell just because it sounds really mean when you read it on the screen, like how heavy those bombs are. So I wanted to kind of get rid of that big punch that the Airbuster would have. But yeah, when you're kind of looking back at it, you're probably just okay focusing everything on the big bomber power move. So, oh, one thing about this before we move on, finding the cards. So the cards are in the room in order for you to access the computers to dispose of whatever element of the Airbuster that you want to. I don't know what it was, but for some reason, finding these key cards were a little bit more of a task than I thought they would be. Like, I don't know if they were just appearing after you defeat
I don't think so.
The enemies in that room, but like they were on random thing. Like, is this just me? Is this a me thing?
It took me longer because, again, like we play the game similarly where we have to look for everything. So we're trying to see if there's a treasure chest behind this door or whatever, or underneath this rubble. So I was just clicking every little inch of desk space to see if I found the card. I didn't have too much difficulty, but I could see where you're coming from in terms of like finding them, because they weren't in easy spots.
No, they weren't. I had to do like maybe one or two laps of the room to be like, what am I missing? What am I missing? It probably doesn't also help playing this at maybe 3 o'clock in the morning
100%.
While you're also falling asleep to try to find these little cards.
Yeah.
After this, you want to make sure that you heal up because you're going to have to get into a huge battle and you're going to want to make sure that you have your lightning materia equipped. So make sure you're stocked up on all that. And then you finally move into the final area.
Oh, the eyes of one who has bathed in Mako, which would make you a soldier.
Ex-soldier.
Once a soldier, always a soldier. Though not, alas, for very long. Accelerated cellular degradation being the most common cause of death by far. This is classified, of course, but every soldier knows the truth.
That's right.
Think you for getting someone?
Would that I could. You strike me as the type to go on without air.
Ain't enough hours in the day to hold you to account for all your crimes.
And what a wasteful indulgence it would be, even if there were.
Okay, then. Let's talk about
wasteful indulgences. What is Mako? The life stream. The lifeblood of the planet. Our planet.
But Shinra keeps on slurping it up like a thirsty dog. What do you think's gonna happen if you don't stop, huh?
We do indeed keep on slurping it up, as you say. But for whose benefit, I wonder. The true nature of Mako is known to one and all, yet the people willfully turn a blind eye to the cost. As you must surely be aware.
Don't you dare try to put this on us! If anyone's going along with your plans, it's because you brainwashed them!
Such methods are beneath me.
So we got a lot in this little clip that we have with President Shinra, pretty much just telling everything about everything and his plans to Cloud. And the idea is that the president is using Avalanche as pawns for a greater thing, which is to stoke war. Now, through his back and forth with Barrett, he brings up a great point that even though everybody knows how bad it is to suck up Mako, people are willingly doing nothing about it. Now, Shinra is going to activate the bomb anyway without Barrett, Cloud, or Tifa's control. And then it cues the Airbuster fight. Now, this is a boss fight where you're going to have 25 minutes because that's when the bomb's going to go off to beat the Airbuster. And it is a tough fight, right?
Yeah, if you melee a lot, it's really difficult. And that's what I found out very quickly, that if you don't use magic, it becomes a bit of a drag where you're just basically healing consistently. I'm sure maybe you had an easier time with it. But I did use lightning materia as much as possible. And then when you get a summon as well, that becomes really useful.
I feel like with this battle, it really tests your ability to defend yourself because every heavy blow takes quite a bit of damage. So, you know, equipping Barrett's lifesaver ability, the HP up materia. This is one thing I kept forgetting, Barrett's steel skin to protect him. I completely forget that all the time.
I usually use his attack rather than his defense mechanism, right? So then I always forget about using steel skin, but it comes in handy in this fight.
Yeah, it does. As well as just blocking. Like, that is dodging. One thing I don't do, blocking and dodging in this game. And this battle really forces you to do that, or else it's going to be a lot more difficult. Now, you want to make sure that you're charging your ATB and use Thundara and Fyra to stagger it. Stagger the Airbuster. And then phase two, you're going to dodge the tank buster beam and continue to put pressure on the boss. And from there, the boss hands out, or his hands actually detach. So you want to avoid them as they float around, because then that's something else you're going to have to use. Barra obviously is the best choice to tackle those guys. And then hopefully you'll be able to use a Sunman to kind of help you throughout this battle. Now in phase three of this boss fight, it flies in the air with its rockets. I love how, like, bosses within Final Fantasy, like, they're just not sticking to the ground. They're also up in the air. They're on the wall. And that goes the same here.
Drives me nuts.
It does drive me nuts as well. That goes the same here with the Airbuster. It flies in the air with its rockets. And it makes magic and Barret's guns, obviously, the way to attack it, because it's a long range enemy at that point. But it does eventually come in close again. And then this is where Nick would shine, because you could use all your melee attacks
and your limit break.
Yeah. So this is going to be for all you players that play like Nick. That's phase three is your phase. Okay. Now, once you defeat the boss, it blows up the bridge, sending Cloud flying into the abyss without Tifa and Barret. So guess what? We're going to have another dream sequence.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
You okay?
You okay?
Yeah. Made it through with just a couple of scraped knees back then. Back then? What do you say? We doing this? Have we? Never mind about that. Right now, you need to focus on yourself. Move something. Anything. Why not? Good. Easy does it. Slow. And steady. Yeah, yeah. Hey, who are you?
Who are you?
I am your everything. Cloud, there's still so much to be done.
So this is an interesting conversation Cloud has with himself. One Cloud asks, "We doing this?" While the other one gets cut off answering and says, "Have we done this?" So there's a lot of confusion between the two Clouds of whether this has happened. And then also, is this kind of leading into your theory, Nick, of the game telling us that maybe this has happened before? Because this is when it opened my eyes and I'm like, maybe.
I'm constantly in this like thought process of maybe there has to be some sort of multiverse. Why would they tease it where, again, like Cloud almost says, like, have we done this before? But he gets cut off. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe they're trying to tell us something like this is all new almost. I don't know. This is very confusing, but I'm here for it because I love mysteries in games.
Yes.
And I love suspense and not knowing where it's going. And at this point, because it's supposed to be a remake, but it's not really, I love that I'm guessing. It's not like a complete remake at this point where I'm thinking, oh, I know when this happens or when that happens.
Yes.
This time I'm just like, ooh, we get some juiciness here.
Yeah, it's a way to keep the story fresh, right? Because you're like, well, this didn't happen before. Why are there two Clouds? And what I like about this moment, too, is you could obviously tell there's two different personalities to these Clouds. You have the one Cloud that we're playing as. He's very, like, confused, all bitter, brooding. And then you have this other Cloud that seems more helpful, more aware and willing to help, right? So it's interesting that these two Clouds kind of offset themselves.
Maybe he has like more inner Clouds within him.
Because maybe they're clones.
Oh, I don't know.
That just came into my head. Oh my gosh.
I have
maybe.
No idea. Honestly, though, we're talking like we don't have a clue.
No, we have no idea.
Even if we've played this game or not. Like it's all up in the air. So don't worry.
You have no idea what's going on in this game. But what we do know is, of course, there isn't a dream sequence without Sephiroth. And we get Sephiroth again. And he tells us there is so much to be done. Almost like he's a part of that Cloud's voice.
Yes.
Or he's rooting for Cloud, right? It's a really weird way he says it.
I just thought, it seems like he's also inside Cloud.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. Like he's part of him somehow as well. I don't know.
It's so weird, but it's making the story even more juicy. Now, that's it for Chapter 7, and we're going to break down the episode one last time after the break on Autosave.
You still don't understand your role in this. What did I do?
Don't you see? You fools were never in control. Never anything but pawns in our plans to sell great and glorious war to the people. And your instruments of insurrection will detonate. When we so choose.
God
Damn it! Now let us raise the curtain on our main event!
All right, so obviously this was a trap. This is the trap that we've been talking about since the beginning of the episode. And that is pretty much that Shinra was using this as a way to tie Avalanche to Wutai, their enemy, and to make it seem like Avalanche is a part of, you know, a terrorist group so that the whole Midgar will rally against Avalanche. And, you know, that's why they exploded the bomb and blamed it on Avalanche. Now, this trap that Shinra so neatly tied together, and also just everything worked in their favor. Was it a good plan?
Yeah, what do you think? Do you think this is a good plan?
No. You're telling me they could have... Look, they already had the first bombing, right? People were already scared. People were already talking bad about Avalanche on the streets. Why not just, with all this technology, no one thought to just edit Cloud, Tifa, like, all of them just in that video footage because they saw them in there and release that to the public.
I get what they're trying to do, like stoking war. It gets people fired up and they're like, okay, I guess, let's call the arms. But it's also such a weird plan too, because you bring the Airbuster in, you fight them, it gets destroyed, but Heidegger leaves before they finish off Airbuster. So again, he doesn't know if they die. Finish the job and then your plan ends up being a good one. But instead, they always leave prematurely. I don't understand it. We saw this in Miles Morales 2, where Simon Krieger just dipped before it happened. Like, just see them off, finish them off. And then guess what? The game ends and that's it. Just kidding. I know the game has to keep going, but why? Why must we have to always see this happen?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm sick of it. I am sick of it. Also, I was kind of sick of the Airbuster boss fight, to tell you the truth. It was a little bit difficult. It wasn't repetitive, though, which, I do have to give this game props, because they do keep the different phases of your boss fight. You know that there's like at least three phases for every boss fight, and they do keep them pretty different. So it changes up the fight and forces you to change how you are going about approaching this boss. So I do like that, but it's just, I was like, okay, this is a lot after, you know, a few missions of literally running around to now just come across this big boss and have to go against it. So that was my only thing.
Sometimes it's refreshing to know that you actually do have to use certain mechanics at different times. There's a lot of games out there where you can just pummel villains pretty easy or bosses pretty easy, but in this game you have to use certain mechanics or else you might fail. And I like that aspect of it, where it makes you think quite a bit.
All right, I like that. Was there anything else here that we wanted to add in?
I wanted to just mention off the top where in chapter 5 they have a conversation with one of the people on the train.
I think he was the snitch.
Yes, yeah. I think so too. I was going to say that earlier, but yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it. But he is a Shinra employee, and they kind of go with a back and forth where it's like Avalanche sees things as one way, but because the media perceives Avalanche in a certain light, the Shinra employee is like, well, you guys are bad. You guys are terrorists. There's some sort of social commentary here that I like, because, and it has to do with media. We see it again where Heidegger and President Shinra use the camera footage and leak it to kind of show these Avalanche guys as true terrorists. But again, Barrett is trying to say like, hey, we're just trying to protect the planet. So I love this back and forth, because it just reminds me of real life, where it's like the media might perceive certain things some way, but that's not entirely how they may be. And although I do think Avalanche does things maybe in a wrong way, where they kind of could be seen as terrorists because they're blowing up Mako reactors. Like, it's obviously a bad thing. But they're trying to do it for good, but it's not seen that way because it's perceived in a different light.
Yeah, there's always two sides to that story, right? Or to any story that's happening. And we should be aware of both. But it also shows just how Shinra just controls everything. You have the employee working for the company. So obviously they want to believe the company that they're working for is good, right? They don't want to believe that they're working with the bad guys. No one wants to work with the bad guys. So it just shows how complex this issue is, and that we're getting both sides of that. Now, one thing that we didn't mention, which we have to all the time, why is Cloud's sword so big? And really, this one isn't too bad. I think this one is the obvious one we've all been thinking about. I don't even know what's called the handle for the sword. There we go. I know that's not the proper name on a sword, but we're going to say the handle.
The cross guard, I guess?
Maybe.
You're not a steelsmith?
Okay. No, I'm not. No, I'm not.
All right.
But that always interferes with Cloud's head. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this through playing through, but at certain cutscenes, when Cloud turns his head, his luscious blonde hair sometimes goes right through that handle of the sword. Now, I know this may be a little glitch on the game's part, but that just opened my eyes to seeing that he's going to have a bad hair day every single day because of this sword. No matter how perfect he is, no matter how cute he is, his hair will always be a mess because of this sword.
No, but listen, any game that you play, if a character has a sword on their back, it never looks that great. There's always some sort of glitch where it's either like protruding from their neck or it just doesn't look right. It's not sitting properly, but from far away, it looks great. I'll never agree with you about this sword thing. I think his sword is properly big.
No, no. It's either like the gel that Cloud is using right now for his hair, because his hair looks so perfect, although this sword is obviously hitting the back of his head into his hair. That cannot be good for his health. If it is holding his hair down that hard, it's not good for him. I'm concerned for Cloud's health.
He's got some good gel, by the way, if it holds up that well and he's running around that much. It's pretty good.
He does. He does. Well, that's enough about Cloud's hair. And that's actually enough for Chapter 7. You know, that's pretty much everything that happens. That's our thoughts. And that's it for our episode today. Now, remember, next time we're going to be looking more into Final Fantasy VII Remake when the game takes a complete 180.
Welcome to the Honeybee Inn, Cloud. You seek my approval, do you? I understand.
But remember, you'll just have to figure out what's going on along with us next time on Autosave.